Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
getting fragments of history together. So I've just speaking with someone in the RSL Return Services League who's organising a history of the local sub-branch. So if you can imagine, there's a reserve return soldiers league. So no reason, they've just stipulated who can join it and what they're for, and everyone's joined up and donating money to it and stuff like that. And in 75 years old, this return service league. I'm sort of really trying to think. I think it was, did it begin in 1940? I really can't remember. 45. Yeah, in 45 it began. And this old chap's got together the records that he could get together. And we've got someone else in the History Society who's done some really detailed research into the World War One veterans, and so I'm getting the two together. And we've got sort of this recurring problem over and over again of books and work in print media needing to get into digital media. So that's one thing. I'm going up now to Dennis for just a couple of minutes, who's the Historical Society, getting up on file transfer protocols and trying to get Google search and various things going on at all. So just to actually print it, and I suppose it's by the Journal of the Glenbrook Historical Society, GADIS, produce that up there. Oh, let's have a look at that. So there's a recurrent problem of these fragmented efforts between different people, and just pulling those efforts together. There's a whole lot of goodwill, and people actually just reading their work and working through it, because there's a hell of a lot of good intellectual energy put in, where people research things and authoritatively work out that other people have drawn false conclusions and stuff like that. So this, and you've got the issue of certain people uploading stuff, and then suddenly something which is uploaded has copyright on it. You know, this is completely sort of bizarre to try and work those issues out. But you've also got the issue of identifying a fact, where it is, and whether it's true or false, or is there a contradictory fact for it. And this is the entire area that someone going into it to get to a fact, to see how it's related, has to do all this background reading, huge amount of research, and people aren't really interested in it. So there's this sort of two aspects coming up to this software which I've developed, which is called All Things Considered, which will be able to actually take the facts, take it apart, and see whether there's a contradictory fact or where a myth or something comes down. There's two aspects. One is there's a software aspect, and then there's a little catalogue of disagreement that they could get going. It's 1:20. I've got to get out of here by possibly 1:40. It's going up here to my mates. Up to my mate's place. Okay. Okay, this is the way to do it. I've taught this cheats way of doing it. Yeah, so it's the fundamental idea of these highly granulated pieces of information which form an image in different ways. So you've got your passing person who just slap shots, runs through, it's an image that's good enough, near enough is good enough. We just have to go from there. I might finish this off pretty much when I come back out of here. Okay, back podcasting. That's after visiting my mate Dennis, and just unsuccessfully in a couple of minutes trying to set up an FTP program. I'll actually just copy the crap from my computer and just email it across to him, But that's the general idea, to get as many people trying to get stuff onto the internet. And he's completely relaxed. And of course, I'm just trying to get everything done. I was watching here, the traffic's a little bit iffy trying to get through here. The general issue is history itself is, it's all word of mouth. Authenticity is so hard to actually nail, and I think what people do is they try and over edit their stuff in effort to get it ready for print, or for, they've got some imaginary point in the future that they're looking at where everything is printed. I'm just watching here as the traffic goes round. Almost every time I sort of listen, I don't have coming across here, sort of, there's always a car coming. I just don't have a bloody enough acceleration. You do, of course, but it's just in this Tarraga, reasonably powerful engine, a gas guzzler. It's gone through 2/3 of a tank for 317 kilometres, so it's 400 kilometres a tank, which is sort of just ridiculous. It's an 80-litre tank. It's sort of just, it's a horrible gas guzzler. And then for all of that, when it's absolutely loaded with kids and backpacks, it's got no acceleration to go across. So what happens is, in your head, you always remember the worst acceleration ever, going forward on it. So there seems to be a generalised problem of bullshit. There's just benign bullshit of people just making errors and simplifications and why they bother. And it's sort of benign, good-natured bullshit in terms of they've got so much time and they want to get the story across. It's sort of like human nature, where you simplify something in terms of, you know, how is your day at school? You automatically edit that the answer to that, so it's nice and small and short. Yeah, and so you can wait till the important point in time of, and so, Mum, can I have money for this excursion? Or so, can I get all this done? There is a social purpose to modified stories, except all being said, they so a lot of people, when they are telling a history, have a reason for telling the history, a time and place, and what they want to do is tie it up in a bow and hand it to you with a couple of basically, people are expecting history not to be a bundle of facts, but it's got to have a punchline, you know, that there's an ongoing mystery, say like the HMS HMAS Sydney, which got sunk by this German radar, that's the way you say it, scuttled and sent down to the bottom of the ocean. The big thing about that was that there was a mystery about it, that there's, people want that one line byline, and the problem is that this one line byline is for local consumption at the time and place. It's got to be a byline which works historically, i.e. that you've got to get your story's got to have a hook into something, and the hook has got to be a hook into something now. And so, like, their byline is trying to pick out, say, for this case, considering World War One veterans, the byline at this stage is, you know, the stage I think he was looking at, the work done around 2000, where he said there's heaps and heaps of mistakes. People have a sort of a sense that World War One was still relatively close at that stage. There's still people in 2000 bumping around the place who'd been around in World War One. actually fighting in World War One. There's still a few odd people there. The power plays that go into it. So the idea is that the military history has become incredibly charged in that people somehow froth it up. You know, obviously it comes down to a couple of people getting in a truck and with so much guns and ammunition and some no idea, and they've trundled off over a hill, and that becomes a heroic, you know, a brave heroic act. But you know, to what fraction of the day those people actually thought the great thoughts and did the great human, superhuman things? Minimal, you know. I have to say, possibly minimal. Maybe one or two people, right, for many months, but majority of people, just a minimal. It was just history was happening, and they had another focus in their life, that is to survive or to have kids or have a family and stuff like that. This is all natural stuff, and this sort of, we have a myth of the great male Australian, and that myth is actual food and fodder for modern day politicians to actually get and use. So it becomes highly charged and highly contorted, because people, it's sort of like people are taking raw ingredients, chopping it up and making a recipe out of it. And so what happens is that you've got a dish served, and you've got to actually take apart the original ingredients, actually have something which is endurable, first-hand evidence of what was going on. Eventually people lose the thread of it. Now, this is where this sort of transformation to the digital age is, that at a certain point these handwritten records get ported across. And I don't suppose people, the main view is personal, is first-hand sources, that is people who were there, wrote. Any other thing gets this recipe added into it. However, there is this thing about where someone looks at a record, writes something up, and collects this information, which is not necessarily easily accessible to future generations. So you know, to future generations, they have these little boreholes into history which they can get things, whereas people at our time have got these horizontal holes which they can grab things. So perhaps as a reference to other people grabbing things and putting them through. And I suppose the legitimacy of people, everyone coming into our society are treated as sort of a passive consumer of information. They consume and don't process it and don't push it or don't challenge it. And so this is interesting to this chap, and in this Peter Foster, who's actually putting it together, trying to actually put it all together. You've got what you call the armchair historian, who has read a lot about it and is sitting in an armchair and talks about it, and it's easy enough for everybody to dismiss it. I suppose what's interesting is that the people who definitely aren't doing it are the people who've got their toe in the water right now, sort of doing power plays, manipulations and stuff like that. They're the people that are the consumers of the recipes, whereas these armchair historians are the sort of the connoisseurs. I actually don't think the two actually mix. And there is this sort of fundamental sort of secondary problem in that if you extend yourself into manipulating the situations that you're in charge of it, you become very highly sensitive to
the recipe, you know, part of your story of going forward is built upon the recipe, rather than being a recipe, but being the actual thing. So people can't actually distinguish between the actual food groups at that level and the actual things that's pulled out of the ground and the recipe that they've constructed. They can't actually see that that recipe has elements of creativity, which is just handed in just before the camera starts rolling on their great chef piece. And so you've got this clash between people who in the recipe world, they believe that that is a souffle, it's not an egg. And you know, there was the story of, say, the chicken laying the egg, or the grass being grown for the chicken to eat, and the snail, all that, that time of history gets wiped out, because it's, you want to actually say, and there was the chicken. You don't want any story to go further back back with it. But of course, the answer for why, say, for instance, this particular egg is low on a particular protein or a micronutrient, is that the actual micronutrient is actually isn't in the soil, or why the chicken was there in the first place, why it was all these other factors there, which you really need to get a whole angle on history. Now, there's that happening. So you've got two groups of people. One group of people who are consumers of the recipe, and perhaps people who are less consumers but more constructors of recipes. They're a little bit of a recipe from the law of them themselves, and they can, there's more than enough people making up things for what they want. I do like the story of what is the difference between firmly believing something is true with no evidence for it and telling others about it and making things up. And of course, the thing, obviously, as you go into the recipe, it's the meal and stuff, you get less evidence, the actual evidence base of what you're doing drops. And there is people sort of rationalise a low evidence base by saying that the actual media, the world, can't support it. They have the image of what the restaurant is and what the people are like coming forward. And so they actually say that this is light on fact, high in interpretation, i.e. it's cooked up. They cooked the facts to suit to balance the taste of what they're eating. And of course, the taste of what they're eating has many contradictions built into it, built up from the history of what they're coming towards the table with. I'm trying to actually run a double metaphor here, a metaphor for truth and history with cooking and the actual process, and trying to actually get across the difference between, say, the farmer and the gourmand coming up across here. And of course, the farmer has a lot of things to do and a lot of practical things to do. The gourmand somehow has to talk about their productivity, their importance, but at the end of the day, if you don't have a gourmand, you might know less about a topic, you might be worse off in terms of cooking a recipe, but if you don't have a farmer, you're not actually going to get the actual facts, or the truth, or the produce to actually go across. So you've got those two different levels, and what's happening is that person in the kitchen is getting all the takings, all the money. They've got the power associated with it, because the actual decisions and resources go through those persons. So people obviously gravitate to it, and they apply simple logic that deficiency thing. If this was taken away, what would happen? And therefore, they sort of calculate due to that situation that, you know, if they look at the accounts, account money for where power is, it's the people who can actually make something up or can reflect what's going on. So it's a bit of a story how it's going on. So the issue here is that the fundamental restructuring of the actual how far a fact can go, how far it can persist, how far the information associated with a fact continues. So imagine a mushroom growing fibers into to horse shit and actually growing big. And that's got a full story with it that the actual person who picks it can actually pick that mushroom, can actually figure out. So now, up to this stage, we've lived in a sort of a market system where people's ability to attach knowledge to an idea or link it to an idea is limited. It's almost like picking the mushroom, putting it in a basket, and then taking it to market, and then it all going through various places. So that the actual history of that mushroom gets lost because it's so expensive. The mushroom only has so much food value in it. I'm feeling buckle all tired at the moment. Should say, I don't understand why this is so. Probably sleep and various things like that. The issue is now we can actually track information for much longer with much ease. And sort of the way that this is that the information is not so much where the product comes from, but who's buying it and why it's important. So you have your identification card, and the big data is being collected, and then there's sufficient of it to come across. But, say, for instance, if we have a batch of medicine or even a batch of produce that has an accounting number, and we can actually start to track it through this big global system. Now we've reached a global system of information with the internet, and we can actually track where this information is from and coming along. So I'm actually up to this doctor's appointment. So I've just come along here, and you may have heard that I'm very, very sleepy at the moment. Hopefully the podcast is still good, and of course the objective here is to crash through. It's these sort of funny second-hand objectives. One is to actually improve or sustain with disability. I think that's the two separate things. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm off too. That's 23 minutes of me bullshitting.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.